Vic didn't dance. But not for the reasons that most men who don't dance give to themselves. He didn't dance simply because his wife liked to dance. His rationalization of his attitude was a flimsy one and didn't fool him for a minute, though it crossed his mind every time he saw Melinda dancing. She was insufferably silly when she danced. She made dancing embarrassing. He was aware that Melinda twirled into his line of vision and out again, but barely aware, he thought. And it was only his familiarity with every physical detail of her that had made him realize that it was she at all. Calmly, he raised his glass of scotch and water and sipped it. He sat, slouched, with a neutral expression on his face, on the upholstered bench that curved around the Miller's Newell post, staring at the changing pattern of the dancers and thinking that when he went home tonight, he would take a look at his herb boxes in the garage and see if the foxgloves were up. He was growing several kinds of herbs now, repressing their growth by depriving them of half their normal sunlight and water with a view to intensifying their flavor. Every afternoon he set the boxes in the sun at 1 o'clock when he came home for lunch and put them back into the garage at 3 when he returned to his printing plant. Victor Van Allen was 36 years old, of a little less than medium height, inclined to a general firm rotundity rather than fat, and he had thick, crisp, brown eyebrows that stood out over innocent blue eyes. His brown hair was straight, closely cut, and like his eyebrows, thick and tenacious. His mouth was middle-sized, firm, and usually drawn down at the right corner with a lopsided determination, or with humor, depending on how one cared to take it. It was his mouth that made his face ambiguous. For one could read a bitterness in it, too, because his blue eyes, wide, intelligent, and unsurprisable, gave no clue as to what he was thinking or feeling. In the last moments, the noise had increased a decibel or so, and the dancing had become more abandoned in response to the pulsing Latin music that had begun to play. The noise offended his ears, and still he sat, though he knew he could have wandered down the hall to his host's study and browsed among the books there, if he had cared to. He had had enough to drink to set up a faint, rhythmic buzzing in his ears, not entirely unpleasant. Perhaps the thing to do at a party, or at any gathering where liquor was available, was to match your drinking with the augmenting noise. Shut the noise out with your own noise. You could set up a little din of merry voices right inside your head. It would ease a great many things. Be never quite sober. Never quite drunk. Dum non sobrius, tamen non ibrius. A fine epitaph for him. But unfortunately, not true, he thought. The plain, dull fact was that most of the time he preferred to be alert. Involuntarily, his eyes focused on the suddenly organizing pattern. A conga line. And involuntarily he found Melinda, smiling a gay catch-me-if-you-can smile over her shoulder, and the man over her shoulder, way over it and practically in her hair, in fact, was Joel Nash. Vic sighed and sipped his drink. For a man who had been up dancing until 3 last night and until 5 the night before, Mr. Nash was doing very well. Vic started, feeling a hand on his left sleeve. But it was only old Mrs. Podnansky leaning toward him. He had almost forgotten she was there. I can't thank you enough, Vic. You really won't mind picking it up yourself? She had asked him the same thing 5 or 10 minutes ago. "Of course not," Vic said, smiling, standing up as she got up. "I'll drop around tomorrow at about 1:45. Just then, Melinda leaned toward him across Mr. Nash's arm and said almost in Mrs. Podnansky's face, though she looked at Vic, "Fuddy-duddy, why don't you dance?" And Vic saw Mrs. Podnansky jump and recover with a smile before she moved away.